We got to get out more. We're learning about how do we navigate a technological world with screens that are threatening to swallow our lives up in ways that make us better person and following God. And today, I get to talk to one of my favorite persons about growth and spiritual life and how do we move forward, Dr. Rick Blackmon. Dr. Rick, thank you for joining the show.
Hi, John. So fun. Thank you for having me.
We were actually together yesterday taking a long walk and talking. We're talking about the fruit of the Spirit right now, that we want to get into the flow of the Spirit and develop love, joy, peace, patience. And what we're going to be looking at today is goodness, which is just a real fundamental quality of spiritual life, of moral life, kind of this real basic distinction. Am I becoming a good person? And is my use of technology helping me to become a good person? However, just as we're getting into that, Rick, we were talking yesterday about technology, how it affects not just our relationship with God, but our relationship with other people. And you made a very interesting comment about how that tends to play out in the lives of women and men, husband and wives. So I just wanted to hear folks, have folks hear that thought from you, and they can think about whatever that means in their own life.
Yeah, I just was telling you, since you've been talking about technology, in the past many years, I just have had so many couples where it turns out that the man is upset by how much his wife uses the phone, scrolling or texting or doing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And this might be a little bit politically incorrect, but I was just thinking, I was trying to remember if women very often complain, at least in my office, about that, and like hardly ever. I'm a pretty busy therapist, and like that doesn't happen very much. It just often happens the other way. So I'm not even sure what that means, John, that why are men, I don't know, I guess I think they feel like it competes with the attention. And it may mean that men are just needier. That's very possible.
I'm guessing my wife would vote for that option.
Mine might too.
Yep. Yep. No, I remember we've talked about Deborah Tannen, who's a social linguist from USC, wrote a really interesting book about men and women in conversation.
Yeah,
and she talks
did.
About how in general, it can be stereotypical, but in general, growing up in girl world versus boy world, we all want a sense of esteem and to feel good about ourselves. In girl world, words tend to be used to bond, and a bonding is a sense of well-being. So words tend to be stress relievers for most women. In boy world, the road to esteem is more often through mastery. So I have to use my words to show that I'm smart or smarter. And so in boy world, words are often stress producing. And so well be that connecting with people by texting and so on might be something that tends, as a general rule, to be more of a stress reliever in girl world than it is in boy world.
Yeah. And so maybe, and you know, women are just so communicative, and they're just using this technology as another means of being able to do that. That's definitely true. Anyway,
there's,
I just thought that was
interview just in the last couple of months with a sociologist from King's College London, Alice Evans. And her big area of study now is how fertility rates, population growth has kind of reversed itself. And so it's happening less and less often, increasingly in the West, but also Latin America, Middle East, birth rates are down. And couples are done, marriage or even cohabiting, so that now a majority of adults between the ages of 18 and 34 are neither married nor cohabiting.
Wow.
And her concern is that technology, she says, she thinks is playing a significant role in that. And we're retreating into what she calls digital solitude.
That's scary.
Yeah, because people are just frustrating. Relationships are hard. if we're talking with you, I have less control. I got to try to read. What are you thinking? What are you saying? It might be painful if you disagree with me or if I say the wrong thing. And when I'm just alone on a screen, I have much more control of my world. And it can be anything from different websites. It can be the use of porn. It can be video games. But it's just very interesting that, at least according to this particular sociologist, our social skills, aptitude, appetites are tending to go down as we're retreating into digital solitude.
It's scary, but it does make sense, doesn't it? Like, I don't know how that bodes for moving forward.
Do you? I haven't asked you this much. Do you talk with folks in therapy about technology, screens, and so on, and how it affects their lives, their relational lives, their spiritual lives? Does that subject come up much, or has that not really changed much over the last 30 or 40 years?
No, all the time. Comes up all the time. In a lot of different ways. I would say, especially with parenting, and I feel kind of grateful. I know Laura was on a little while ago to young people's thoughtfulness about this topic, particularly after Jonathan Haidt's book. I think most young couples that I talk with have read that book and are trying to take it seriously and control screen time. But yeah, so it comes up a lot. It comes up, you know, as a impediment sometimes for conversation. Again, it's especially in that gender way that I said. So that's come up. Like, that was the thing that hit me when you started talking about this. Yeah. Like, this comes up all the time in my office.
That's so interesting.
Usually the wife feels a little bit defensive about it. And
I find for myself as we go through this, you know, we're looking at those commitments from Andy Crouch about 1 hour a day, one day a week, 1 week a year, no devices. Our devices go to bed before we do, wake up after we do. Accountability. By the way, I want to talk to you more on the accountability front. I talked to Rice Branning, and he talked about how the amount of screen time and so that we do is something we can share. And so I want to use his app, but do that together with you.
I love
this
that idea.
This is just now reminding me. I had made that decision, but we haven't talked about it yet.
And that would be the last thing I would say is when people are thinking about growing and using spiritual practices for development and growth, fasting will come up, and only it's almost always fasting from technology.
Interesting.
More than food these days. Yeah. That's a big change for just people.
It just used to be such a habit. This morning when I first woke up, we both enjoy baseball and baseball statistics, and I was looking up the latest stats on Aaron Judge because I knew he hit a home run yesterday. And I was like, no. I've said that I'm going to give some time after I wake up before my device wakes up. But it just happens without my even thinking about it.
Yeah, that's honest. Okay, I look forward to that, John,
okay.
Doing that with
you. So making that commitment, everybody can hold me accountable to that one. Now I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, this idea that to become a truly good person from the inside, generosity of spirit, the inclination to love, and so goodness is one of the fruits of the spirit and a primary one. And so the question, as somebody who looks at life change, because that's what you do, you're working with people and they want to change anxiety, or they want to change depression, or they want to change how they parent, or they want to change their marriage. And that line between psychological health and spiritual moral goodness is one that can be, I think, kind of fuzzy. So I wanted to get your thoughts on how do people pursue goodness? And in particular, in C.S. Lewis's little book, Mere Christianity, he has a chapter on psychoanalysis, which was, you know, relatively new and kind of being grappled with when Lewis was doing his work. Yeah. And going to therapy was not nearly so much a thing at this point 80 years ago as it is today. He distinguished pretty sharply between the aims of therapy and the aims of what we might call discipleship or spiritual growth. So he uses the example of fear, courage, when there's war. If somebody's got a phobia or a neurosis, an irrational, exaggerated fear that would keep them from doing their duty as a soldier in World War II, then the job of psychoanalysis, and we might say therapy, is to remove that irrational, subconscious, neurotic fear.
Yeah.
So that the person would be at kind of a loving level playing field, and then they would be able to decide, do I want to do what is moral and good, do my duty, do my part, do my share for my country and fellow soldiers and so, or now that I have greater levels of self-awareness, will I use that selfishly to actually shirk from my duty is... So he says the basic moral and spiritual choices are really what lie before us after the work of therapy to cure our phobias and neuroses and so on have been done. They're just kind of getting us up to moral neutral. And I thought it was interesting, but in our day where psychology will talk a lot about positive psychology and the acquisition of virtues, some virtues will get talked about in that field, other virtues maybe not so much. So for all of us who are thinking about how do we try to cultivate goodness in our lives, as somebody who works in life change, how do you think about that?
Well, I still like very much that distinction that you just read from C.S. Lewis. I think therapy, which I'm trained in as a psychologist like you, is still kind of diagnostically driven and oriented around pathology, neuroses, anxiety, depression. And I love talking about that kind of stuff. But I can see in my own career, John, and honestly, I probably would give you a lot of credit for this, that it might be because of me or maybe in the field of psychology, like you said, positive psychology, that there is a shift that a lot of people will make, and in partly I think it might be, is the counselor open to that? Like I will sometimes think, I have different hats and roles with people, not just a therapist role, but a coach role, a pastor role, even that sort of thing. But people rarely still, they rarely come in and say, I want to work on becoming a good
person. I was going to say, I was thinking, you know, Dallas Willard famously has these basic questions that he said we all wrestle with. And one of them is, what is a good person? Because he says, like, at memorial services or funerals, we'll always end up talking about ways in which this person was a good person. So we can never get away from that. That's water cooler conversation. That's what we gossip about. Most of our gossip is about, oh, this is not a good person. So he says that, what is a good person? And am I one? And how do I become one? How many people have come to you over the years and their presenting problem is, I'm just not a good enough person and I want to grow at being a good person?
It's never, right? Never. But, and again, I don't know if it's because I'm interested in this or the particular people I get to work with end up being interested in not just the therapy piece, managing anxiety, overcoming depression, but they want to be, this is a line I stole from you years ago, something like the best version of themselves or God's best version of themselves, which then starts to get at being a good man or a good woman or a good person. And it strikes me that you can't become a good person on your own. You need the Spirit. It's a gift of the Spirit in that list. But you also need people. So when I think of becoming a good person, I think of like the kind of friendship that you and I have, like a spiritual friendship. You probably can't do this by yourself. I think of coaching. We can coach so many other things, but if somebody is, like when I think of the conversations you and I have, John, it's commonly I want to be the best version of myself in this issue I'm having in my marriage or with one of my children or with some friends or with some clients or that sort of thing. And you helped me enormously on that, to just kind of chart that out. And I sometimes don't see it as clearly inside of myself as maybe you will be able to see it. So a friendship, a spiritual director, a pastor who takes an active interest in my life and where it's going. So I think you can kind of train yourself in goodness. I don't think you can will yourself that easily into being a good person. But if you're open to the topic, and actually all the people that watch you probably are in some of those kind of relationships, or even if the ones that are watching are in therapy, I challenge them. I challenge you. go talk to your therapist about how can you help me to become a good person.
I don't think I've ever asked you this question. As a psychologist, you will think diagnostically about people, and is this person suffering from bipolar or OCD or whatever that label might be? Do you find yourself ever thinking or often thinking, this is a really good person, or I have concerns, this is not a good person?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Thank you for that question. But just as you said it, yes, I think I feel tuned in to this question of goodness. Like, is this person a good person? Is there, and again, there's no such thing as a perfect person, and none of us are sinless. But moving in the direction of wanting to do the right thing, wanting to have integrity, not wanting to game the system, not wanting to cheat, being a truth teller, having again, having integrity. And yes, I can think of a couple people right now that I think my assessment was this is not a good person. This is not a person of truth. This is not a person that necessarily wants to do the right thing. They want to either be comfortable or grease the skids to
I had
having
not
things
planned
easy.
on ending up here, but I'm going to read one more little section, a few sentences from C.S. Lewis from that same chapter. It's on morality and psychoanalysis, and then you can comment on it. And the time just flies by. We're over time now, and it's like
All right.
we could talk about this for hours. No, it's my bad. But Lewis is writing about that relationship between psychological material and our moral character, and that we're all born with different genetic inheritances, and we have different experiences growing up. So he says, some of us who seem quite nice people may in fact have made so little use of a good heredity and good upbringing that we are really worse than those whom we regard as fiends. Can we be quite certain how we should have behaved if we had been saddled with the psychological outfit and the bad upbringing and then with the power, say, of Himmler? That is why Christians are told not to judge. We see only the results which a person's choices make out of their raw material. But God does not judge us on the raw material at all, but what the person has done with it. Most of the man's psychological makeup is probably due to his body. When his body dies, all that will fall off. And the real central person, the thing that chose, that made the best or the worst out of this material, will stand naked. All sorts of things that we thought were our own, but were really just due to good digestion, will fall off of some of us. All sorts of nasty things, which were due to complexes or bad health, will fall off others. We shall then, for the first time, see everyone as he really was. There will be surprises.
Boy, is that powerful. It reminded me of Gandalf talking with in the Lord of the Rings about not being able to control the times that you're in, but what we just get to do is figure out what to do with inheritances that we have. That's really powerful.
No,
That's really good.
and how none of us is in a position to pronounce judgment. So,
Yeah.
Rick, thank you so much. This is wonderful for everybody watching. That longing for goodness is inside of you. It may get clouded over with other things, but it's there because God has placed it there. So to listen to it and to ache for it and to ask God and ask the Spirit. And then, as Rick talked about, look for a friend, look for friends that can help me pay attention to where is that desire for goodness? Where am I getting in the way of it? Where am I blocking it? And then go out and do it. We got to get out more.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from John. You can also visit our website, becomenew.com, to access all of our videos there or subscribe for the emails that go with each video. But my personal favorite way to stay in the loop with Become New is by text. We will send you a text message every morning that we release a new video. with the title of that video and just the link to the video. So if you want that, you can text the word BECOME to the number 855-888-0444 and we'll get those messages to you. If you've got a prayer request, there's a group of us who meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, for 1 hour to pray for viewers just like yourself. So you can text or email us your prayer request at 855-888-0444 or at connect@becomenew.com. Remember, the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.